It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed on the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had a million dollars,
if I had a million dollars,
if I had a million dollars,
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. How are we today?
We are doing awesome.
I am living the dream, as they say.
The Financial Cafe rides again.
I know. They invited us back.
Still. They still haven't figured it out.
One day they will, and we're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, well, I'm not telling.
Okay. I won't either. Well, folks, we have some talent in the studio with us today.
Who showed up?
No. We have some talent. We brought somebody with us.
Oh, okay.
We have Rob Pickerel with us today, and he is the vice president Midwest Regional Bank, and he handles what we call SBA, or Small Business Administration loans. And since February is our small business month, why not bring in a small business lender?
That makes a lot of sense, John. How do you think of that?
Rob's been doing this for 16 years. I just told him he doesn't look like he's been doing this for 16 years. It hasn't worn on him like it does others.
Anybody in mind?
I'm looking at you.
Yeah. I thought there was a mirror behind me, but, you know.
So, folks, sit back, grab your cup of coffee. This is the Financial Cafe, and we're just going to sit back and learn about small business lending. Rob's going to give us information on what does a lender look for, what are they going to ask you for, kind of a top 10. You know, we're original. We got our top 10 list going as far as questions that they're going to ask. But as we move into the In the Market segment, Larry and I have our soapboxes ready. We're going to jump back on, and we're going to look at an article that I found yesterday, and Larry also saw it yesterday, and we decided this one would be good to talk about. 2/3 of Americans aren't putting money in their 401k. Now, I thought that number was kind of high. Now, I may be skewed and biased because of the plans that we work with. We certainly have more than 2/3 participation in our plans. But according to Ben Steverman, 2/3 of Americans aren't putting money in their 401k. That doesn't bode well for their retirement.
That seems extremely high to me, John, because as you said, with the plans that we work with, if we don't get 70-80% participation, then I'm disappointed. You know, we must be doing something wrong. And I have seen other statistics recently put forth by other agencies and individuals who should know what they're doing and talked about participation that's at some of the highest rates that we've seen. So I guess take it with a grain of salt. We'll see
it is a Bloomberg
actually,
article.
It is Bloomberg. Yeah, that's true.
You know, now, again, I don't want to get political. As I have stated before, I am a conservative. But at the end of the day, I want common sense solutions, and I want the left and the right to work together. I don't like when politics get in the way, especially when it comes to the American people. But I did pull up some articles, which I thought were interesting. One was from the New York Times. Would you agree that the New York Times tends to be a little left-leaning?
A little more than a little, but yeah, we'll go with that.
Nothing wrong, but it's a little bit left-leaning. Yep. Their solution was, we have a retirement savings problem. Politicians can help. Folks, the five words you never want to hear from the government is, when there is a problem, is them to say, we are here to help.
Yeah, and I'm from the government. Yeah, right. Okay.
So we don't want to hear that. That is not an option. I believe it's a combination of a couple things, but personal responsibility comes to mind. And there was also another article I read that talked about that as Americans, we are not very good at planning for the long term. We are good at short-term stuff, our vacations, or we want to buy this, or we want to buy that. And, you know, one of the questions I asked during our seminars is very simple. Who here has had a financial plan done? And most of the time, there's crickets for the most part, but every now and then some hands do go up.
10-15% maybe.
And then I say, okay, who here took a vacation? Just about everyone's hands go up. How much time did you spend planning that vacation? Well, you know, we had to research where we're going to go, what are we going to do, where we're going to stay.
What the cost was.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, wouldn't you view retirement as your longest vacation?
We would hope so anyway.
So
we would hope so.
What are some other reasons you can come up with? Why are we in a situation that an article is written that two-thirds aren't putting enough money away when we know if we don't retire, that unfortunately the other option is death. So we do want to retire.
It does kind of narrow it down, you know, death or retirement. I'll take retirement. I think one of the keys that I run into most often in working with particularly younger millennials, they are pretty good savers overall.
That is true. I've noticed
I know,
that too.
You know, my daughter kind of fits. She's kind of on the borderline of a millennial, but she's been a saver since she was 18, and it's paid off. She has a decent nest egg for her age. And we find a lot of the individuals who are now in their 20s and 30s don't know what they don't know. They don't know how much to save. The most common question is, I know I should participate in the plan, but how much do I need to put in? And, of course, we attempt to the best of our ability to answer that question. And the rule of thumb, I hate rule of thumbs, but, you know, you need to be putting in 12 to 15% of your gross income on an ongoing basis from when you begin working until you get ready to retire. Right? I don't care whether it's at 60 or 62 or 65 or 70, whatever it happens to be. If you will do that statistically, if you run the numbers, you will have enough money to live another 30 to 40 years. How many people really put in 12 to 15% is part of the issue if they put in anything. So I think education is key, and that's what we try to do with our participants is to educate them. This is where you're at, and yeah, your retirement may be 30, 40 years from now, but if you don't start planning now, you lose compounding. You lose the power of rule of 72s. Your money doubles at 7% every 10 years, at 10% every 7 years, you lose the last doubling of your money, which can be huge if you've accumulated a nest egg of $300,000 or $400,000 and you can't let it go to that $800,000 number. It can make a big difference in retirement. So they really lack the education to know. And a lot of the older generation who were brought up beginning, as my parents were, you know, prior to Social Security. And then Social Security came on the scene, and, oh, by the way, that's going to be a major component of your retirement. Well, as it turns out, it is a component in many cases, but it's not a major component. It's a partial component of that total picture. The defined benefit plans have pretty much gone by the wayside as far as pensions, and people don't have a solid income stream that's going to start at 60, 62, 65 when they retire and be able to last as long as they do. So the education, I believe, is the key to the 20-year-olds to even 50-year-olds who have not put enough money away and really don't know what they're going to have when they retire. So our job is to better educate them to putting money into the plan. And I've found in a lot of our plans, if the think of several right now where they do a safe harbor contribution or they do a match into the plan. So the employer is already putting in maybe 4, maybe 5% for the individual. If the individual does another 6 or 7%, all of a sudden you're 11 or 12. And guess what? You know, that 12% number is within reach. And then if you plan on maybe just every year when you get a raise, add 1 more percent, all of a sudden you're up to 15. And I won't say you can sit back and cruise, but if you're putting 15% in and you have a reasonable asset allocation, you have a financial plan that is in writing with specific timeframes and objectives, you review it after you implement it at least annually, you're going to get there. And you're going to be unlike the majority of people who begin to retire and go, I don't know what I'm going to live on over the next 30 to 40 years. And that's a problem. Your turn.
Okay. What I it comes down to personal responsibility. I think also we're going to need a mind shift, if you will. I think as a society, it's very much the here and now, kind of, you know, the cliche, what have you done for me lately? We have we're set up to borrow if we want something because we want it now, the immediacy. Marketing and commercials do a great job of taking things that are wants and making them the peers' needs. And Brian O'Connell here from The Street says, when it comes to savings, Americans are more inclined to set aside earnings for purchases than can be enjoyed sooner rather than later. And there's a lot of truth to that. Retirement is, if you're 30 years old, 35 years from now, I'll worry about it then. And unfortunately, it's too late.
Doesn't work that way.
You know, it's kind of like, oh, I'll get life insurance
after
tomorrow,
I die.
But if I die today, it didn't do me any good. You know, we kind of put those things off. And unfortunately, this is something that cannot be done that way. You know, I've had many, many participants take the questionnaire for us to put together a quick little analysis for them, and we never hear back from them.
Not unusual at all. It's that responsibility is a big part of it. Education is a big part of it. I think it's attitude to a certain extent and a reluctance on some part. When I talk to various psychologists and counselors, that people
the truth comes
are
out, folks.
Very reluctant to talk about their mortality. We don't have a lot of choices. Either you're going to live or you're going to die. And dealing with death is something that many people have never talked about, and they don't like to deal with it. And the fact that they do need life insurance, the fact that they do need to save for retirement to take care of those issues down the road, because stuff happens. And if you are not prepared for the inevitable, if you will, the unexpected, as we're talking about next month in more detail, then you're going to be very surprised, and that's why a lot of people are still working through age 70, 75, some even longer. It's not because they necessarily want to. It's because they have to. You know, it puts food on the table, pays for medicine. I've referenced this statistic probably every show for the last month, but it shows that anyone, a couple retiring at age 65 today, is going to spend well in excess of $250,000 on health care over the balance of their lifetime. That could be in the form of illness, could be in form of co-pays, could be in the form of uninsured situations, nursing home care, whatever it is. But if you take most portfolios, which are drastically less than what they need to be at age 65, and you take out $250,000 at some point in the next 10 to 15 years, they're in serious trouble. And they're in a situation that at age 80, 85, maybe it's even 90, but who wants to run out of money at 90? You don't have a lot of choices at that point.
Yeah, you never want to have more retirement than you do money. So, folks, we've kind of beaten this one. I know we talk about this a lot, but this is important. That article kind of scared me a little bit when I saw those that kind of statistic. But this is not something that you put off. You know, I think also the fear, people avoid things they don't know or understand. They don't like talking about it, or they don't like doing it. This is especially on the male side. You know, this is why we don't go to doctors as much as we should and all that. But this is something that is actually very easy to accomplish when you sit down with an advisor and have a little plan put together and get yourself on the right track. It can be easily addressed, and it's not like going to the dentist, even though I think some people do fear it that way because, well, I'm never going to retire, so why should I bother planning? Well, that's backwards thinking. If you plan, then you're probably going to be able to retire. If you don't plan, you won't be able to retire. So with that, Rob Pickerel is going to talk now for 30 minutes.
You ready? Go. Okay,
so
Rob.
I'm going to go grab a cup of coffee. Do you need anything?
No, I'm good. Yeah.
Unless you want to. So what we want to talk.
You want to get some lunch on the way out, or you know? Okay.
Yeah, there we go. Grab me some pizza. Rob has, like I mentioned, been doing this for 16 years, so he has some knowledge on lending for small businesses. This is his focus, folks, and this is what he does. So if you're a small business owner, please listen up, turn up the volume a little bit more, get a cup of coffee or another cup. If you're not a small business owner, a lot of these items that he's going to talk about are going to be required on the personal side, as far as information that's going to be asked of you and so forth.
This is a topic that is near and dear to my heart in a variety of ways. Some of us just kind of fall into opportunities. And you know, my first one started 25 plus years ago, when I bought out my brother's practice in the retirement industry and paid him out over 5 years out of revenue. That's the simplest form of acquiring a business and utilizing the revenue stream over that first typical, in my experience anyway, typically 3 to 5 years, if there's sufficient cash flow to buy out the current owner and then go ahead. And since then, we bought 3 or 4 other practices which were much smaller, but typically bought those over a shorter period of time. And until recently, we had quite a large opportunity come up. And the games have changed. All of the things that I knew and thought I knew about financing were kind of shot out from under me because of the Dodd-Frank Act, because of changes in the banking industry, lending industry that relate to SBA. And so Rob's got a lot of great information relating to that. If you're going to enter into that venture, I suggest strongly you get somebody like Rob who understands the industry and knows how it works and can help you through the maze, because you don't know what you don't know, and that's the most dangerous thing about it. So I've known Rob for a number of years. John has also. Consider him a good friend, and I think a good source of information. So, Rob Pickrell, what do you have to say for yourself?
Thanks. Glad to be here, guys. Thanks, Larry. Thanks, John. It's glad to be here to talk about SBA. Yeah, I completely agree. SBA is very often misunderstood and avoided in many cases. And it's just because people don't really understand it. It's a very unique product, a series of products, and there's a great fit. They don't fit every situation. I'll be the first to tell a customer that you don't need to use this product. There's much cheaper ways of getting done what you need to do. But there are also situations that the SBA fits to help the business make their dreams come through or expand or do things that they normally wouldn't be able to do. So with SBA, we fit that where your traditional, if there's not enough collateral for something, if you need more cash to put into the project, so if you don't have 20% plus of your own cash put into a project, those don't fit traditional banking, and that's most traditional banking. Part of that's because of Dodd-Frank, because of a number of reasons, but SBA gives you more flexibility. Now, it is a jungle, literally, with paperwork and processes.
It is a jungle out there.
We don't know anything about regulations and paperwork.
No.
So working with someone that really understands SBA and the processes and what your options are is going to be a key up front. With the SBA, for me, some of the things I look for, one is going to be a business plan. Business plan is key. There are a lot of generic business plans, and you can find those online. You can find outlines, and I am completely against doing that because those, it's almost like you're fill-in-the-blank resumes. You get what you pay for. For people starting or are looking into starting a business, you want to use places like the Small Business Development Center here at SAUE or SCORE, or there are groups called Growth Corp. They're all over the United States. Every market has their own economic development group. Those are great resources for helping you develop your business plan because they know the market. They know most of the industries in that market. They know what the trends are. They know what the normal cash flows are. So those are going to be key players in helping you develop that business plan. Another aspect of that is, you know, what makes you an expert for your whatever you're going to buy into. So I decided to start a business, and I'm a banker, and I'm going to start a bakery. I'm going to have a hard time starting a bakery. So I may know the math, I may know the numbers, but I might be a terrible cook. So I'm going to do a terrible job of really growing that business.
You can hire my daughter.
I'm not coming.
She likes to bake.
I'm not coming to your bakery, Rob. That's just out of the question.
Might be a little dry.
Yeah. We got Crudas in town. We can go there.
That's right.
All right. So wait. I want to take a step back. So the SBA, as most people know, it's a Small Business Administration, and they have a program that is designed, in my mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, which sometimes I am, not very often, but sometimes, they have a program, watch it, they have a program designed to assist businesses, individuals, in entering into either a developed product, an invention, if you will, or existing business for purchase, which otherwise most banks would not consider doing a loan on, because as my experience has shown, banks like hard assets. They want a building. They want inventory. They want cash in the bank, preferably. If you don't have a building, you don't have an inventory, you don't have cash, then you kind of fall outside of the normal banking industry requirements. And now you're looking for programs that, as you mentioned, through the Small Business Development Center here at SIUE, they have a great program, the Entrepreneurship Institute, as well as SCORE and some of the others. And we have several startups that reside in our building here in Edwardsville. And they all they came up with, I say all, you know, they did it, I didn't, is an idea. And they want to take their idea to market. And so the SBA was really one of the only choices, am I correct, that they have. I mean, other than getting angel investors, if they can get somebody else to come in and put money into it. But outside of that, SBA is kind of their go-to. Is that correct?
Right, yes. Without giving up some sort of ownership and someone that maybe believes in you, you're going to lose a lot of your control. Yeah, SBA is the only way because SBA gives them that collateral, gives them that backing. Because what happens, the SBA is taking a lot of the risk. So in SBA, they take 75% of the risk. So that gives banks a little more comfort with helping those people that have no collateral, that don't have the assets, that's starting a business strictly on projections. And those are tough. Because of everything that's taken place over time, someone that wants to be an entrepreneur, that wants to start from scratch, it's gotten harder and harder and harder mm-hmm. over the years. And SBA has become more and more important to fill that, because that's where that collateral comes into play. It's from their security. And that's why a person that really knows the SBA is going to be so important, because there's a lot of paperwork. It can be very daunting. And if that paperwork is not done properly, those securities aren't even in place. So that's why it makes it tougher for, in some situations, to get those through. So if a bank's efficient with those, with that paperwork, with the processes, it makes the experience better for the business owner, as well as smoother and faster. Because I've heard horror stories that it took me a year to do my SBA loan. It took me 10 months to do an SBA loan. I've heard those time and time again. It sounds crazy, but it's absolutely happened. And if somebody really knows how the process works, it is rough. It's not fast, but it doesn't have to be terrible.
I'm all about that, delegating to the experts.
Yeah, you got that right. So if I have an idea or a business I want to invest in.
Widgets.
As a widget business. Thinking of Nancy and Scott over at the chef shop, because that's basically what they did. Scott was full-time. He just retired a year or two ago from a full-time position. And I'll mention again, as a mass comm grad from SIUE, I went to school with him back in the day. And he just graduated from AT&T, so took a little tangent there, as I did. But Nancy wanted to run her own shop, fulfilling, as she discussed several shows ago, fulfilling the needs of the families to give an opportunity to learn how to spend more family time together to bake and whatnot. But it takes a lot of money to buy an existing business. So if I've got an idea I want to go into, so where do I start? You know, who do I call first in the sequence of events? And is there someone else before I call you as an SBA lender, or where does that begin?
Ideally, I always welcome people to call me first, and it really depends on the lender. Some lenders like to be more hands-on and involved in the process. In an ideal situation, they're going to start with the SBDC, the SCORE, the Growth Corps, those organizations you mentioned as well, because they're going to help them get that foundation, to get those fundamental pieces in place with a business plan, with who their competitors are, what they really want to do. Because like you said, everybody has a great plan. I mean, somebody might have a good idea, but putting that idea together is going to be a total another story. So these organizations, these groups can help them organize their thoughts, help them put them down on paper, and then help them structure them so they make sense for me as a lender. Because I have to be able to pick up this packet of information they give me and see and be in their head and understand their vision. And that's a key aspect of it, because if it's bullet pointing all over the place and I pick it up, I'm going to be more confused and I'm going to become more concerned. What's the likelihood of this working and happening? So I have to really be able to see that business owner's vision and really understand where they're coming from. That's why that a strong business plan, even in a buyout. So if somebody's buying out an existing business, unless they have a lot of history in that business. So if somebody If a baker is buying out another bakery, those are a little more straightforward. I understand that, and that we don't need as much information. Basic business plan is fine. But now if I am buying out, if I've even been working for a bakery and I'm buying out the business, I've worked there for 20 years, but I've never owned it. I've never ran a business before. So I need to, as a banker, I'm going to need to see, well, where do you see this? How do you see this actually functioning? Because when you go from that baker to that owner slash banker, baker, it's a totally different role. You're totally changing the direction of the business potentially. So I need to see what you envision that. So if you envision that, it's going to be like something on Friends where you can just show up and you do your cooking and hang out on the couch with your friends. It's probably the success rate's probably not going to maintain where it's at. On the other hand, if I see the plan, I see that you have a plan in place, you have a structure, you have your accounting, you know how you're going to handle that business side of it. You have maybe you or a family member has expertise on the business side of it. Then it increases a comfort level, because even though there's a guarantee, it's still a bank loan. So the banks have to be comfortable with what's happening. And how
banks don't like to lose money.
No. It's they frown on that. Our bosses, we get our fingers really shaked at us really, really harshly whenever we do something like that.
Yeah. Is it not true? And I've always worked from the premise that if you're going to enter some type of field, particularly a high risk field, because we all know that most startups fail. I mean, 90% is the last number I saw. Maybe it's not quite that high, but 90% of startups fail. And particularly in the restaurant industry, and my goodness, we've seen it around Edwardsville time and time and time again. And I've talked to some of those owners who have gotten into that business, and one of them told me a couple of years ago that they just didn't have enough capital. They got into the business, they anticipated supporting it for about 18 months, and guess what? They ran out of money before the revenue came in to offset it, and they closed the doors. They lost everything that they had put into the business.
Well, it kind of gets to what Rob was talking about. You have a baker who's very good at baking, and now he wants to buy a business. He may not be very good at running the business or with numbers, and if you are in that position, unfortunately, you're not going to be baking much anymore. You're going to be running a business. And that doesn't bode well.
Exactly. And I've always told them, if you're going to consider going into the business, if you can't self-finance it or cash flow it, if you will, for 3 to 5 years, then you probably have no business doing it.
No pun intended.
No pun intended.
That's right. That's why even on the SBA, say I've tried to ensure they're building that in, because 99% of the business plans I see do not have enough working capital built in. Most of them are being all they're in their minds, you know, they're being safe, they're being more honest with what they really have to have. That's all great, but you can't plan that way, because all of us that's had a business know that you don't make money the first 2 months. It's not the
two
first
months.
6 months.
Or 2 years, or 3 years.
Yeah, but you see that.
I made money after month three.
Some of these businesses, that's how they have it planned in. They'll have $4,000 or $5,000 in working capital in there.
Yeah.
That's barely enough to, you know, write that first round of checks.
Mm-mm.
So at the minimum, you know, for me, you know, everybody has their own opinion. I mean, I try to make them sure they have at least the first year and working capital built into it. I mean, there's always opinion in there. Everybody has their own opinion. But I always tell the business owner, you know, this is your wish list. This is your magic wand. You can always pull back. So let's build out as much and as robust as possible. So I completely agree.
Yeah, I from experience, you know, I'm in that magical year five here, but I think we're going to survive it. But yeah, that first year was something else, and yeah, I mean, cash flow didn't 6 months in easy. So 12 months is a good number, because then you have some cushion, because you may be cash flowing, but if your outflow is bigger than your inflow, that's not a good model.
That is problematic. And even getting into the business that John and I are in, I know when I entered into it, leaving a real job, full-time career, making decent money, and it was a good, Well, they told me plan on 3 years in the financial industry to become profitable, if you will. And it didn't take that long, fortunately. It was about 26 months. But it was a good 2 to 3 years before I came anywhere close to making the income that I was making prior to jumping in with both feet and sink or swim type of approach. Because sometimes that's not bad. If failure is not an option, you know, you tend to do things that, you know, make you successful. So, but it's not unusual in any business. I know we have a startup in our building who has been working for going on 6 years now with their particular product. It's a manufactured product. They've had some successes. They've had some setbacks. And the next 12 months is really going to determine if they survive or not. Either they're going to, you know, turn that corner and make it, or, you know, they'll go, it was a great idea, but nobody bought it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have others. I have another one that hopefully will be coming back in with us that they are developing the software and hardware to create touchpad, like iPad or that type of Surface Pro type of pad to teach the blind how to do math. I hadn't thought about it. I didn't know that was a need, but it's a real need out there. And they've been working now, I think they're going on year 2.5 or 3, with various grants to self-fund this thing in terms of developing the technology. And if it goes, I mean, you know, they could be the next Microsoft. I mean, who knows? But you got to start somewhere, and that's what a lot of these entrepreneurs are trying to do. So, all right, so now I have a plan and maybe have a good idea, but I've got to have some good marketing research, too, to kind of tell me, you know, what is the market for what I'm doing?
And I'd like to, if you don't mind, I'd like to back up real quick on the ownership piece of it.
Well, I don't know about that.
We miss. And because I've come across.
It's now the Rob Pickerel show.
Hey,
huh?
Hey.
I've come across a couple of these.
Okay.
Did he become a sponsor?
Yeah.
Did you get his check?
Hear me out.
Well, the ownership, because some of these businesses.
Back up, Larry. I'm talking.
They're putting their own money into it. But they'll have 4 or 5 different family members, friends, what have you, and they'll have 4 or 5 owners, and they'll gift them each 15% to 20%.
Yeah.
So when it does come time to
bad
apply,
news,
the banks bad are news. Requiring everybody to guarantee.
Uh-huh.
Well, the people that are on the books don't want to back out of it for nothing, even though they have nothing into it really outside of some time.
Just money.
So the owner in that situation is stuck. He's trapped because he can't do the loan without everybody signing, and they won't get off. They won't go anywhere.
I'm not putting my name on it.
So I apologize. I want to back up on that, but I've actually personally ran into that twice now, and it's killed one deal. Mm-hmm. And another person is trying to push, makes the structure work, but it's a challenge. It's important to really think of that up front, because we all want to help our family. We all want to help our friends out, but whenever the rubber hits the road, are we willing to start signing our names on things? And that's where, if
they are on there and then things start going well, how do you get them off?
Right, right, right. So I apologize for that. But that's,
No, it's okay. Why don't you just get up and let him sit there?
Yeah, we'll let it go. Yeah, we'll,
okay.
I'll show him what button to push.
Okay.
Yeah. So but what are some of the things that you're going to ask? All right, so we got the business plan, ownership structure, but what should the average business owner or idea person be ready to hand over to you in order to get this ball rolling?
Yeah, we're going to need, first and foremost, projections. Do your research on your market. Don't just pick numbers. So first-year projections has to be broken out monthly for SBA, and it's SBA required. Years 2 and 3 can be annual projections. We don't need to go further than that. I've had people go 7-8 years out, which is great.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, yeah. But
I don't know what next week means.
three years projections is what is required.
Still trying to figure out what to do for dinner.
And what I tell businesses is do your homework. I have a lot of people that there's a lot of great ideas, but I have some of these great ideas that are overly proud in the product, and they're making $2 and $3 million year one. Which I don't even think, you know, Microsoft or Apple or any of the other big ones did that year one.
Yeah.
So it takes time. So really look at what I tell people, really look at what the market's doing, what your industry is doing, look what your area is doing. And that goes back to the score, your SBDC, because they can give you a lot of great information. Another piece of that is going to be your business entity. How do you want to hold that? It's going to be an LLC, C Corp, that sort of thing. So you work with your attorney, CPAs, on creating that. The other piece of it now is going to be your tax returns. We're going to need 3 years of full, complete tax returns for all business owners. So, and many, and I say full with emphasis because I get parts, pieces.
You want more than page one and two?
Exactly. That's typically what I get. And the SBA doesn't want pieces. We're required to get the full packet.
So if it is an individual who is just acting personally, they're not incorporated, then you're going to need the 1040. You're going to need the Schedule A. You're going to need Schedule C.
Right.
You're going to need Schedule E if they have rental. You're going to need any dividends, distributions, all of the attachments, et cetera, et cetera. So, and we've been down this road, and, you know, it might be 20 or 25 pages mm-hmm. per year just on the 1040. And if you are an entity, then, you know, it's 1120S. If you're an S Corp or it could be a partnership, depending on what the entity style is, then you're going to want all those forms.
Right.
And how it's taxed. So it can get, how do you want those? I mean, you and I have talked about this, but, you know, I can do them in paper and give them to you. I can put them on a thumb drive. Email is no good unless they're encrypted because I don't mm-hmm. want to send all that information without putting using Adobe or something and putting encryption on it. Mm-hmm. But what is the best way of doing that?
We love electronic. We'll use paper, but everything I get has to be scanned. Everything's digital anymore, just like you said. So a thumb drive or we've come out with a portal. Many places have a portal. So I can send the client a portal where they can upload those
Dropbox
documents.
Or yes. Whatever it is now.
Something safe and secure. But electronically is ideal if I have my wish list, but I'm not picky. Most places will take paper or whatever is available.
But when you say Dropbox, when I say Dropbox, I don't think about what is known as a Dropbox today. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we won't go there. Go ahead.
Showing his age again.
And proud of it.
And then after once we get if we get tax return plus in addition to their personal tax returns, if they are part owner of any other company. So if Joe Schmo is a 20% owner of a widget company, we're going to need those financials as well. So SBA requires that regardless if you're a minority owner, you have to disclose what you're part of. And part of that is because they want to make sure that this loan isn't going to be used to support some other entity, mm-hmm. which makes sense. But that's the other aspect. We will be asking, and that's an SBA requirement, that any entity you're part of, we're going to have those that financials as well. We're also going to need a complete updated resume from each owner. Part of this is we want to know the background because we want to know the character of that person. So we're going to need a full resume for each business owner.
So you want to know that he is a character? Is that what you're saying?
I don't even know. Wow.
Yeah.
That might be a deal breaker for me.
Yeah, it could be. Could be.
And then also we need, this seems straightforward, but it's actually not, a detailed breakdown of loan needs and uses. So there's many cases I'll get a loan request for, just say, $100,000. So we'll say it's $20,000 by equipment, $50,000 for construction, and then they'll have $30,000 for miscellaneous.
Miscellaneous doesn't work.
Right, right. Or they'll have $30,000 for personnel. Well, what does that mean? So the SBA, we have to have a breakdown of what that is. So if, say, $30,000 for personnel, that may be we're hiring 4 employees at this.
Boy, they work cheap.
Right. So we have to have it as detailed as possible.
Yeah.
We don't like buckets. We like it broken down to see exactly where those funds are being used.
So you really want a cash flow budget.
Yes. Yep.
Imagine that, John.
Very detailed.
Imagine
there's
that.
A lot of similarities here between small business and individual planning.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the SBA always requires a life insurance policy on those owners. And
I like that part.
And that, believe it or not, as basic as that sounds, that holds up most opportunities. Because nobody can close an SBA loan until that's in place. It has to be in place up front. Mm-hmm. And getting that collateral assignment and getting that in place and depending if they're doing whole life or whatever they're doing, that can take sometimes a month.
How big does the policy have to be? It's the amount of the loan?
It has to match the amount of the loan.
Okay.
It's got to match the amount of the loan. Because we don't want that burden because if something happens to the key person that's running the business as the true backbone.
You're out of business.
Right, yeah.
No, it makes sense.
Well, it's like Key Man Insurance, and Rob and I have talked about this, but there are several companies that we work with that are A-plus rated life insurers who have expedited programs specifically for SBA. And if and it is contingent, it can take a month, 2 months, sometimes longer to get a life insurance policy issued. But 98% of the time, it's because the individual won't either return the paperwork signed or they won't submit to the blood test and the paramed. Because I can turn a life insurance policy and have it issued within 7 days, as long as the individual will get the required medical information, and the doctors occasionally will hold it up if they have to do, they'll go to the Medical Information Bureau, get certain things. But then if they want to go to the doctor and get the doctor's report or file, some doctors, and I've been told by a number of them that, we either vendor that out to a third party or we only do that once a month or whatever. So getting the doctor's information sometimes takes intervention by the individual to say, doc, I really need to get this done. You're holding up my deal here. But given the fact that they could get the paramed done, they can get the paperwork filled out and signed, I can have it issued in 7 days or less.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
But just saying.
Thanks for sharing.
It's okay. I
appreciate that.
This is the Rob Show, you realize that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the list of items. So your business plan, your correlating paperwork that the SBA requires. We're going to need the projections, the business entity information, personal tax returns, a detailed need to use as life insurance. The person needs to have decent credit, can have, and just decent credit.
And what number is decent?
And that's a gray area, just because it really depends on the financial institution. It's hard for me to give.
Am I talking to an attorney? Safe. Just want a number, man.
You got to be careful. So it just really depends. It's got to do.
You have a range?
That reminds me of that Christmas card. Yeah. Never mind. Go ahead.
It just makes it tougher. There's charge offs or former liens and that sort of thing. Just make it that much tougher.
Well, let's touch on that for a moment, since we're talking about credit scores.
We found a weak spot, and we are going to attack.
Topic near and dear to my heart. It really requires any individual, whether you're going for an SBA loan or any kind of loan for that matter, it could be getting car insurance, it could be, life insurance, it could be anything that you buy that requires money, they probably are credit scoring. So you need to know what your score is. Go out to annualcreditreport.com, print out, you can do Experian, you can do Equifax, you can do TransUnion, one time per 12-month period. Take a look at it, because it is not unusual that clients find things charged to them that really should be charged to someone else of a similar name.
If you're a junior like I am.
If you're a junior, or if you, have a similar business or Social Security number. I found where Social Security numbers have been inverted. Instead of 2-4, it was 4-2, and they've been charged against things. Or it can even be a judgment. And I really found that odd, but with one client, they had a judgment on their record, and it was for a parking ticket that they had paid, and they had proof they had paid it. But the courts reported the judgment and never reported it being paid. But it dinged them 20, 30 points on their credit score. So then they go to court, get proof, send it in, and then it took 3 months to get Equifax and TransUnion to correct it. But it you can't do that when you need the credit score. You have to know that your credit score is solid, because if it isn't, there are things we can talk about on another show and discuss how you can go about getting
that up into
that area.
So, Larry, since Rob was avoiding my question.
Yeah, go ahead.
What would you say is a reasonable credit score?
I would say reasonable score for most situations is probably at least 640.
640.
Yeah, okay. In that neighborhood. As I mentioned to you, I met with a mutual insurer this morning, and they insure home, auto, businesses, trailers, motorcycles, et cetera, in Illinois. They are one of very, very few insurers who do not check credit. And that's unique. because we have, when you go to your credit, your property and casualty agent, and they run a preliminary number for you, they're assuming some basic credit scores that maybe you're above 600. And when they finally go to issue, they do pull credit. And if you're at 4 or 450 or 5 or whatever, your rate could double or triple in some cases. Right. So, but there are a few companies, as is this one, who don't check credit. They do, however, do a verification of Social Security number, you know, illegal alien status, to determine if you have any outstanding warrants and similar things. But if your credit score is really in the tank, you need to start working on getting it up there. And if you need insurance in the meantime, call us. We can probably help. Okay, advertising overhead. So.
There we go. So in your experiences of 16 years, what are some of the crazier things you've seen businesses try to...
Wow. You mean types of businesses?
Yeah. Just like, here's my idea. I want a loan. And you're shaking your head going, no, I'm sorry. I can't. We can't finance a marijuana producing company or something like that.
I was just
like
thinking that. John.
I know. Well, I knew you were with all the stories, that you, crazy stories you've been showing. I figured I'd beat you to the drug
my
punch.
My friend from Australia, yeah.
You know, I really haven't had anything too off the wall. I mean, I've had some interesting ones.
Oh, come on.
But I really haven't, truthfully.
Now,
haven't
the attorney's like coming in. In two weeks, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
In two weeks. Mm-hmm. I didn't know we were having one this week.
Yeah.
I haven't. I have not had anything crazy. I really haven't had anything off the wall. Everything, I mean, I've had franchises. I've had family buyouts. I've had mergers I've worked through. Nothing too off the wall.
We really got to do a better screening of our guests.
I know.
For entertainment purposes, you know?
So what percentage, I'm going to put you on the spot here. So what percentage
he's not giving out numbers.
Of deals would you say that you get involved with are successful?
Of course, the ones I deal with are all pretty strong.
No, yeah, well, that's 100%. I know, but everybody else.
Wow.
Yeah.
You have the same bias as my partner over here. Mr. Wonderful.
Well, I mean, we try to do as much due diligence as we can up front to make sure that everything makes sense. So, I mean, it...
Here he goes again, avoiding the numbers.
Well, it's truthfully hard to say. It really is. Just simply because everything looked great on paper. I could really love the person, but something beyond their control could happen.
Your next congressman, Robert Picaro.
He's got the signs in the car. I love it. Well, the one thing, Rob, you didn't mention, I'll get you off the hook here. The one thing you didn't mention in terms of application for a loan, I guess any loan, but SBA, I think particularly, is you have to have really thick skin. And by that, I mean that, you know, they're going to delve into every...
Nah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They're going to ask a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. Personal.
Yeah, I guess it's got beeped anyway. And they're really not asking them, you know, in a personal nature that you're not a good person or you're not doing a good job or whatever. But their job is to determine that it is a viable business and that you have the ability to operate the business once it's in place. And they're going to delve into stuff that you may or may not want them to delve into. So, you know, you better have a thick skin when you're going into the process of running any business.
Think it from the bank's perspective, you know, if they have a deal go belly up on them, how many good deals do they need just to get back to break even? So they're going to be very careful before they lend that money out. They need to see that you're serious about what you're trying to accomplish. And then you're willing and showing that you're going to do the work. You're going to... be organized, you're going to be professional, you're going to take care of the things you need to take care of to run this business so they get their money back.
And is it true that the more parties involved, the more due diligence, the more due diligence that you have to do in terms of approval because it brings into the picture other unknowns?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We have to look at all owners, any aspect we have to look into, and it's just due diligence. This is the same as in any industry. We really have to do our homework. We really have to see what's happening. We have to understand what's going on. We have to see the whole picture because, like you said, if if something's being held back, it will come out at some point through the process. It's inevitable. It happens on a regular basis that everybody has something personal they really don't want us to know, or it was in the past, and
it's really not relevant.
I've had some situations that were really not relevant and in their mind, but they came up through the process.
Where were you Friday night, September 22nd, 1972? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we won't go there.
Okay.
Well, I can think of one example, and maybe it's a bad example to give, but I can think of one example in locally where there were two partners, and they were both married. There was, husband, wife, and they entered into a business venture. It was not through you, unfortunately. And it was a number of years ago, 10 years ago or so, and the partners got into a dispute, which my guess is happens more often than not, which led to not only a separation from the business, but ultimately the surviving partner with the business got divorced, and then the whole thing went belly up. And, the bank, of course, was insured for their $500,000 through SBA and got their money, or most of it, and the business went out of business within about 6 years. So you just can't predict some of the interrelational issues that you get into. And my basic philosophy is partnerships don't work, at least if you want to be sure of success. Because when you have two people, like-minded or not, and they're both investing in the same type of thing, often, they have different ideas about how to accomplish it. And in this case, that's what happened. So, although I can think of several partnerships locally in Edwardsville that have survived 30 or 40 years and, they're doing quite fine. So not that I contradict myself, but anyway.
Next.
9 minutes.
9 minutes. Well, Bob, anything else that you can think of or add? You want to share your particulars, your information with everyone's.
How do we get in touch with you?
Sure. The easiest way to call me is my cell phone. It's always on me. 618-830-2231. 618-830-2231. It's Rob Pickerel, Midwest Regional Bank. Something else I'd like to point out, because everybody asks, and you hear it, preferred and non-preferred bank lenders. You hear that all the time. It's very, very simply, a preferred lender means the bank is approved by the SBA to approve the loan on behalf of the SBA, because there are two sides of it. So a non-preferred means the bank can approve the loan, and then after the bank approves the loan, it goes, the entire package along with the bank approval goes to the SBA, and the SBA does the same thing on their end. So there's dual approvals taking place. In a preferred lender, it all happens at one stop. That's the only difference, because I hear that quite a bit. So what's the difference? That's there are no other differences. We all have to use the same guidelines. We all use the same rules. The only real difference is how the approval process works.
Why would a bank want to be preferred versus non-preferred?
And the idea is they have more control and faster turnaround time.
Okay, makes
sense.
Because
they're doing it. That's the idea behind it, but there's really no difference otherwise.
Okay. That's good to know. And your office is located?
My office is located in Fairview Heights, Illinois. My entire 16 years have been here in the Illinois side on the metro area. The SBA, the recap again, great uses for SBA are startups, expansions, acquisitions, family or key employee buyouts. Any situation where there's a collateral shortfall or there is a limited cash injection. Now, SBA does not cover if there is a lack of income or cash flow issues. SBA does not fill in that role for cash flow issues. So if someone is having some challenges and then they go to apply, it doesn't fill that void. It's really just to fill in for the collateral and the allows a person more flexibility on how much money they put into the project.
All right. Well, fair enough. Thank you for joining us and putting up with our... thank you for putting up with us.
Thank you for putting up with John. I know,
John,
I was fine.
Oh,
we feel free, if you have questions regarding SBA lending, et cetera, feel free to contact Rob. You know, there is no obligation. He will give you the information you request, help fill in some of the blanks. If he can't assist you in the process, he'll refer you to those who can. Hopefully you've learned a little bit more about lending process, small business lending, particularly for commercial startups, and how that all comes together. So, you know, take advantage of the resources that we put forth to you and use that to help you maybe take a step towards realizing your own goals and dreams and objectives of starting your own business. It's not for everybody, but when it works well. So thank you, Rob.
And we need to thank our sponsor for that segment, the topic of the week, the Chef Shop. I have snickerdoodle going right now, and I'm okay with it. It's a frou-frou, but you know, that was what was in the counter. That means Larry bought the coffee recently.
I did.
He didn't get me any Colombian or fog lifter or anything like that. But
John, get your own.
Okay. I did. I took some of your snickerdoodle, and yeah. It is quite delicious.
Well, the snickerdoodle coffee, of course, which is one of my particular favorites, it's the original award-winning snickerdoodle. It is the best seller for the Chef Shop. They've blended spicy flavors of cinnamon, hazelnut for a smooth, aromatic coffee. And, of course, go visit them. There's lots of good stuff besides coffee. They have the fudge. They have the popcorn. They have just about every device that you could think of for yourself or a loved one. We've got some holidays coming up, as far as the summer, and just for no reason, go in and see them. Scott and Nancy Schneider, sponsoring the show. They're located at 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025. Phone number 618-659-9840. And if you didn't catch the show when we interviewed Nancy here a number of weeks ago, go to our website, www.thefinancialcafe.us. And locate her show. She gave us a lot of insight into the areas of why she went into business and how she went into business. And now Rob has shared a lot of ideas on if you want to go into business, this is maybe a way of developing financing for you to be able to realize your dream. So thanks to them. We appreciate them underwriting the show and continuing in support of WSIE 88.7 FM, the sound on the beautiful campus of Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville. Welcome back, Daryl. I know you were off for a few days. Glad you're feeling better. And we have, yes, I allow time for that. Perfect. We have our silly criminals. I know we've talked in the last couple of weeks about...
You have been focusing on criminals. It's starting to make me a little nervous. So this is now our segment of Strange News Stories Indeed, and this is where the listener gets to participate. Go out to the website that Larry just mentioned. My email address is there. Larry's email address is there. And vote on Larry's criminal drug story or my story here. I will let Larry go first.
Well, this one has nothing to do with drugs, John. It is criminal, okay. Somewhat, but it has to do with stupid criminals. It was in San Francisco. Can't imagine that. But a San Francisco thief pedaled his bike past a woman on the sidewalk, snatched her iPhone out of her hands, and rode away. Sounds not unusual. I guess it does happen. But unknown to him, the woman who he stole the phone from was in the middle of demonstrating the iPhone's new GPS tracking system. Which worked, and the police picked him up momentarily
after
he stole the phone because it located exactly where he was at.
How hard was she laughing when he went off with
she
that phone?
She had to be going, it works! Yeah, there he is.
You dumb criminal.
Uh-huh, that's my
story.
Well,
I have one here, and actually it has made some, I found it the other day, and it has now gotten some mainstream attraction, but... A young millionaire is going to sue the lottery because it ruined her life.
I'm sure.
She was 17 when she won $1.6 million.
Is that legal before 18?
This is in Britain, so.
Oh, okay. All right.
That explains a lot there.
No, that's true.
But she won $1.6 million at 17.
It's tough.
Now she's in her 20s, early 20s, I believe. And... she wants to sue because it ruined her life.
She blew through it all, didn't she?
I would imagine so.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. In spite of $30,000 Range Rover, Louis Vuitton handbags, Park said she still hasn't found happiness.
Imagine that.
So again,
money doesn't bring happiness.
This gets back to personal responsibility, common sense financial advice, common sense financial decisions. You win $1.6 million. Be happy.
Yeah, don't spend it all in one place.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about that.
So March.
Vote. Go out and vote.
March will be. What?
Vote for the story.
Oh, thank you.
You're like, welcome.
Do we have an election coming up? I thought that was already done. March is going to be the unexpected month. What happens when the unexpected happens? So we are going to have a couple guests on right off the bat. Mm-hmm. We're going to have Pat Mathis from Mathis, Marafin, and Richter.
That's a law firm.
Talking about estate planning. So we know that we will not get any straight answers or numbers in that interview either. And then we will move on to divorce.
Yeah, Michelle Laws, who someone I've known for probably 15, 20 years, specializes in working with individuals who are unexpectedly or expectedly entering into a divorce situation and some of the financial ramifications that that can have to an individual's future. So should be a couple of fun interviews. We're looking forward to those as we wrap things up here on the Financial Cafe. Don't forget to check us out, www.thefinancialcafe.us. And thanks again to WSIE, SIUE Board of Trustees and the University for helping us, granting us the opportunity to share some financial advice. Let us know what you think. Go to our website. Say goodbye, John.
Bye, John.
Bye, Rob.
Bye. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.